हरे हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे.
So we're constantly trying to see how to provide some material for the additional books, and pretty soon we'll have another beggar available. But from time to time, I'm writing a small entry, and today our discussion will be based on an entry that will go into the volume 2 of the next beggar book. This is called At the Court of the Superintendent of Death. We find that in many religious understandings, ancient cultures, as well as in folklore, there is reference to the fact that there are special agents who oversee transitions. When you leave this body, there are certain things that happen. There are certain things that are arranged, and there are certain arrangers. Just as, for instance, archaeologists are exploring how there have been different civilizations at different times, and exobiologists, sociologists, religionists, mystics are quite familiar with the understanding that life is in many variegated expressions. The Vedic scriptures explain that there are 8,400,000 different types of bodies that the soul enters into as it is transmigrating one lifetime after another due to the karma factor. And so even now in biology, they're trying to somehow categorize so many different species. There's so many different insect species, plant species, etc. Many of them are becoming rather extinct. And then we see, as we look at science like exobiology, astronomy, how it looks at other universes, other galaxies, which of course scrutinizes civilizations unfolding. Now, one may wonder, why are there so many different types of civilizations? Why are there so many different types of universes, planets? And why are there so many different types of bodies? There are the animals' bodies, there are the insects, there are the reptile bodies. Even the human species, there's so many, many different types of human forms and different realms. Some of the bodies are more subtle, some of them more gross. They're angels, they're archangels, they're devas or demigods. And the different forms of bodies that are associated in the spiritual kingdoms. This is what we hear according to different traditions about heaven. And so we hear that there is a certain type of environment, certain types of things that go on in heaven. Or paradise. Heaven, we find usually expressions describing how there is less and less interference with the sense gratification that one really pursues. One doesn't have to pay taxes, one doesn't have to worry about crime, one doesn't have to worry about diseases and so many different things. One can live a life of sensual enjoyment extensively. This we find in the Quran. It discusses about paradise. It explains how one is in paradise. One does not age past that of 32 years old. And one is in paradise. One will have dozens and dozens of servants and dozens of virgins and dozens of so many things to experience, to enjoy. As we evaluate in the Vedic scriptures some of the expressions about the higher kingdoms, and we find that in the higher kingdoms, like in Brahmaloka, we find that in the higher kingdoms, the heavenly kingdoms, that these are also environments where there is accelerated amount of gratifications. So obviously there is no accident that there is such heterogeneity, such variety. Because just as we find in the Judeo-Christian conception, that as Jesus says, in my Father's house, there are many mansions. There are many divisions, many expressions of even the spiritual realms. What to say of the material, temporary realms? So it's not that even the spiritual kingdoms are just some kind of monotonous environment. It's just homogeneous, and there's no variegatedness, there's no variety, there's no adventure. It's the opposite. The real adventure is, of course, that in connection with spirituality. And we find that in Christianity and Judaism and Islam. We find it throughout Vedic scriptures, etc. Maybe a little more detail in the Vedic scriptures, but we find that throughout all the various traditions. So then, we see something else. If we look at the scriptures referring to the heavenly kingdoms, we also see expressions about hells. Sometimes we find that the descriptions are one suffers due, of course, to sinful activities. And the Vedic literature, we find that not only is there such environments as hellish environments, but there are different punishments according to different kinds of sins. And even the hellish expressions are also full of variegations. And that is law. Proper law means that one is to be accountable, and there are boons, and there are also chastisements. As we follow the law, or when we are lawbreakers, then there are certain things that are concomitant with our actions. And so, who is the greatest carrier of the law? The law of the real, of course, Supreme Personality of God. Where humankind may be duplicitous or biased in terms of carrying out the rule of law may be relative according to time, place, and circumstance, according to impartial lawmakers and law providers and executors. But of course, that is a relative thing based on material character. In the spiritual sense, we understand that there is no getting around the Supreme Personality of God as law. If we can cheat God, then how do we understand that in the Godhead? So we're all accountable. The Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Yayata Mambra Pajante, Tam Shari Bhakta Jama, Mamamana Bhajante, Manusha Pajante Sadhava. That if each individual surrenders, then accordingly, Supreme Lord is received. So just as when the sages and Nama Sriranjaya have come together, many, many different backgrounds. All kinds of rishis and yogis and mystics and spiritual adepts, what we would call prophets and some of the special acharyas. And they wanted to know what is best activity to engage in. They're ready to situate themselves for hundreds and hundreds of years, because in those times they were living on, environments are different. And trying, and ready to engage in all types of rituals to access what is the best thing, what is the best dharma to acquire realization. And of course, Sutta Goswami appeared, a very special saintly personality. And he didn't say, the best dharma, the best activity is Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, this branch of Christianity, this branch of Islam, this branch of some sectarian situation. No, these are all realities. But emphasize consciousness, unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional consciousness to the Lord. Why? Because you find cheaters in any tradition. You find hypocrites. You find exploiters, manipulators. And so cheater is a cheater. Any bona fide system, one should bona fide practice that to get the result what that system offers. And so he emphasized that there is one God. The significant thing is our loyalty, that supreme, based on not breaking the laws, and based on gradually being able to identify ourselves as being beyond just physical entities. Because again, the Judeo-Christian conception is not that blood and flesh go over the kingdom of God. in the Vedic conception, we understand the Atma Vidya, that aparyamikastam yampakitam piti mekam jiva bhutam mahabaho kayidam rajadeja. There is a higher nature than divinity. There is that which is higher than just the physical form, the physical body, the physical universes. They are the outward expressions that are housing the spiritual connection. So every time that we meet death, then the individual is evaluated. And so in the Vedic scripture, there's very distinct information about this evaluation process. And based on the what is called the three modes of material nature, there's mode of goodness, mode of passion, and mode of ignorance. And these modes, at any one given time, are interacting on material environments, material nature, and on consciousness. And they engender certain type of actions and certain type of mental processing. So according to how one lives in this particular lifetime determines what their next existence is going to be. And according to how one has lived in the past, as a direct connection with how one is functioning, unfolding at this particular time. That is just accountability. That is responsibility. We do things and there's no reaction, then we understand the universe is not really ordered. It's not really organized. It's not an ultimate controller. But if we are held accountable based on things we do, then we understand there are laws that are universal. And there's a universal controller who is overseeing, ultimately, those particular laws. When people are irresponsible, when they are immature, then they are very active in being unaccountable. And when someone is mature, God is easy, God will not be easy. And when they are mature, then they are very careful, conscientious about their actions and the reciprocation that's in accord. So today I wanted to read something from one of our coming books, a short offering, emphasizing some things about what happens when one leaves this body. Because when we leave the body, we go before a spiritual court. Different names are there, the superintendent of death. In the Vedic cosmology, we refer to Yamaraj, who oversees the judicial aspects based on the spiritual court. Now, if one has lived a life of degradation, extreme degradation, being influenced by the mode of ignorance, that person in their next life will get demoted in different ways. One who has led a life based mainly on passion, in the next life, will be more prone to experience various types of environments like this earth-like environment. It is a environment so much affiliated with the mode of passion, selfishness, egocentricity, so much desires for individual distinction at any cost. So it's a self-centered environment of struggle. And one who has basically been influenced by the mode of goodness, who's been pious, devotional, then they may go to heavenly kingdoms, etc. And one who has understood transcendental subject matter can literally go back to associate in the divine spiritual realm, which in this discussion we may talk about this briefly. For instance, just as in the heavenly kingdoms, we talked about how there are places where there is less distraction of sense gratification. In places like Brahma Loka, one of the highest of the material kingdoms, one does not experience so much disease or old age. There is death, but the divinity lives for so much longer. And the basic anxiety is not so much one's own anxiety, but the anxiety that is associated with looking and reflecting on others' sufferings. So the anxiety is more an anxiety of sympathy or empathy, and realizing how other people are not quite as fortunate, and one putting some anxiety that others are struggling in such a way. Then there is what is called the Vaikuntas. And the Vaikuntas is a certain high-level expression of the divine spiritual kingdom. As we said, how Jesus said, in my Father's house there are many mansions, emphasizing that even in the spiritual kingdom there are many, many divisions, many, many aspects, many relationships, many areas of service. So in the Vaikuntas, living entities are living in an eternal expression. They are literally associated with the Godhead. They all have similar attributes as the Godhead. Lotus eyes, Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, very, very powerful book that talks about pure devotees, souls who come from the spiritual world, coming into this world. And it describes various high-level things about the pure association and about the pure kingdoms. It expresses how in the Vaikuntha form, living entities have dazzling effulgence. They are very opulent in terms of their lifestyle because there is no shortages, no limitations. They have lotus-like eyes, brilliant blackish complexion. They have the same mystic or ascetic powers that are possessed by the Supreme Lord Himself. And this is just one aspect of the spiritual kingdom, and there is still an aspect even above the Vaikuntha realm. So what determines where a soul goes is distinctly in connection with consciousness and what type of form, what type of body, what type of experiences the divinity experiences. But there is individual karma, and there is racial karma, tribal karma, planetary karma, universal karma, that determines why something happens to one person, to one planet, to one universe, etc. And there are those agents who have ability to alter karma. The sons of God, the great acharyas or daughters of God, they have the ability to alter karma. They have ability to change what happens to an individual, to change some of the effects that happen on a planet. They have the ability to alter what we may call normal history. Why? Because they themselves are not confined to the limitations and the restrictions of being in the material body. Being in any type of material body, it doesn't matter what gender, what race, doesn't matter what time, is a disturbance because it means that one is not in their a pure spiritual expression. So in the book of Corinthians, it means that there is a terrestrial form and there is a celestial. Terrestrial is the physical and the celestial is the spiritual. And that while we're in the terrestrial, the physical, we are away from the Godhead. So any physical form, any physical body is like a distraction, it is a limitation, and it's somewhat of a punishment due to the fact that one is still envious of the Supreme. One has not given up their tendencies of wanting to lord over material nature. And so one will have different bodies, different professions, different environments to engage in that lording over until someone comes to the point that they no longer want to be experiencing limitations, but now they want to be able to fully love and serve the Supreme Personality of God. So this discussion here, that I'll read briefly, is an expression of coming before Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, and being processed. Because when we come, when we leave this body, the physical body is left, of course. And according to the culture, something happens. Some places it is buried. Some places it is put into the water. Some places it is burnt, cremated. Other places left on a mountain for the birds to eat. Different environments, different situations, but the body is finished. But the subtle body takes the soul to its next existence. So the subtle body is what is brought before the superintendent of death, Yamaraj, in his court, And decisions there are made that determine what the next person's life will be. And so this is, of course, transmigration or reincarnation. Reincarnation at one time was accepted on the entire planet by all peoples. It's only in modern times is it being sometimes not accepted. It is a part of ancient Kemet philosophy. It is a part of Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, Confucianism. It is a part of Native American philosophy. It is an integral part of mystical Judaism. It is an integral part of mystic Christianity, original Christianity. It is an integral part of Sufism. It is only recent influence from the West that people have begun to doubt accountability, reincarnation. Because it is a universal, but more and more when we live based on reductionistic thinking, we do not want to accept accountability. We want to simply to enjoy in the moment and not be responsible. But our responsibilities are there. Some things we get immediate reciprocation, sometimes later reciprocation, that is maturity. So here I'm writing this as coming before Yamaraj and then being evaluated. Now, when one does not have to take another physical body, that living entity does not have to appear in Yamaraj's court. But then the soul expands, and that becomes the spiritual expression that associates with the Godhead. So no more physical or subtle bodies. While we're in other lower or higher planets, we're in different types of bodies, higher planets, more subtle types of bodies, where there is a greater sense of longevity, greater abilities, etc. Like in the Vaikunthas, there's also different types of transportation. But the living entities move around on swans, or in Brahmaloka, they have psychic powers where they are able to use various means to travel. They're not limited to just the gross three-dimensional expressions that we are associated with in the earth like that. So here, we present to you at the court of the superintendent of death. Death has recently come and stole me away, like a thief taking away his prey in the dead of night. I was just giving some information about the week ago. It's interesting. Because many times people have near-death experiences where they literally die and they're resuscitated when they come back. And so there are books written about some of these things that people have experienced. And often, we find more people seeing angels or being in very audacious environments, peaceful environments, and not so many discussions about people meeting hellish environments. And so recent researchers have done, one of my devotees, Subal, he sent me some reports about certain professors who were looking at this phenomenon. And to their amazement, after scrutinizing 200 people, they saw that there is an overabundance, or there's more people who have negative experiences than the positive. Meaning that there are more people who are in a sinful mode. And so what they get the glimpse of, which is sometimes going to be their next life, if they do not change, is not something very glorious. But often those who have that experience are pious because they don't leave the body. They have a chance to work on themselves for further growth and advancement. Otherwise, people think, well, maybe there is no such thing as a Yamaraj's court or a hellish environment. This is a matter that you just keep transmigrating, you go higher and higher, and that's it. No, that is not the case once you come to the human species. Other entities, when they leave the body, they naturally go up to the next species. Because they do not have the distinct kind of free will that's attributed to the human form. But it's only in the human form where we have the chance to make those philosophical pursuits for closure. We can literally go back to the human. So at that level, we have responsible to the point that we can go up, or we can even be demoted, go down. So here, expression, activity, death has just come. I was constantly thinking, why me? This isn't people leave the body, or death happened to someone that they know. They're always thinking, but why? Why has it happened to me? Everyone has to go at some point. But still, when it happens to a person, they're normally thinking, why has it happened to me? Or why has it happened to my friend? Everyone's going to go. It's an appointment that nobody can miss. I was constantly thinking, why me? And why am I here of all places? Days, months, and years went by. It was so fast. I clearly remember being in primary school, high school, college, later traveling around the world. We can all look back at our lives and see how things are moving so fast. Many of you can remember when you were 5 years old, 10 years old, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40. Time is moving very quick. Before long, you'll be elderly, looking back and thinking, how time is moving. Well, you're already older. I can remember such. Of course, in my late 40s, I began to feel some distinct changes in my body. But I continued to live as if my physical body was eternal. So the other day I gave it on some workshops in Alachua, Florida. And I was explaining how not only do men, do women go through menopause, but men, they also go through something very similar. I began to explain and define some of these things, physiological, psychological things that take place as we enter into midlife crisis. I should have understood that those changes were signs of machine wearing down. And see, it's healthy for people, partners and people in general, to know some of these things because it can help us to understand why people experience certain things psychologically, why sometimes they're more sensitive than other times. And as people want to have strong, healthy relationships, it can help to create a greater sense of love as there is more understanding in that bonding. As I look around, there was complete silence. So we're talking about now. We left the physical body. It was called death. One moment, and then moments later, there was so much loud screaming. I felt the noise would surely deafen me. I had never felt so alone. And moments later, I felt so crowded in as if I had little individuality. At the height of my bewilderment, Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, appeared along with his court. I screamed and I pleaded that I was not supposed to be there. But all I could hear was millions of other souls making similar claims. I tried to distinguish myself to show that I was different. But again, so did millions of others. Somehow, although most souls were feeling they did not belong in this environment, Yamaraj somehow mysteriously addressed each person, explaining and showing them why they were sent to him. But the person makes a crime and they go, hold on, I'm not guilty. It's not my fault. But then the case is presented and shows that you were highly good, highly responsible. And there's living entities happening constantly before the court. Yamaraj has so many different types of sins that people are engaged in, so many arrangements for punishment or rectification is necessary. He addressed me sarcastically. You are Bhakti Tirtha Swami, Krishna Prabhu. Where is the Tirtha of Bhakti? Have you been able to get, Tirtha means holy place, Bhakti of course, devotion. Have you been able to get most souls under your care to take full shelter of you and give up their sinful habits? It is the duty of the saintly person to bring out the devotion. Otherwise, what is the question of proper sainthood? The duty of the acharyas to remind the divinities what they have forgotten and to help them to reclaim their spiritual heritage. They're also like something like boundaries. So have you been able to get most souls under your care to take full shelter and give up their sinful habits? Yamaraj speaking, I think not. Then why are you referred to as Krishna Pad, one at the feet of Krishna as a servant? Didn't you know that if you could not and did not purify your dependents, that you would have to be accountable for their sins? This is the idea that most Krishna background, when we say that Jesus died for our sins, that the sons of God, that they have the ability to take karma. the ability to intervene, and they have ability to alter what happens to us, or to alter what the burdens that we carry, and they take or absorb some of that on themselves. That one can be freer. They don't do everything for you, but they help to direct you and give you the encouragement and guidance, and they do relieve. This is your sense of baptism or initiation, that one has some of the karma taken away so that one can be freer to act upon celebrating their devotional life. But that karma does not just fly into the sky, or just disappear. It's taken or it's absorbed by the acharya, by the saint, by the son of the Supreme. So everybody's accountable. The spiritual master is sometimes referred to as like a lawyer. He intervenes on one's behalf. But the lawyer is accountable. He has to follow certain laws and certain requirements and certain taxes on that person to carry out their particular duty. So when we take initiation, we're making a pledge, disciple, making a pledge to be able to be saintly and to follow and to stop engaging in sinful activities. And the spiritual master is making a pledge to engage and to protect and to guide that particular person. And therefore, Krishna, God, looks at that contract and holds all parties responsible. Like if you bail somebody out of jail, so you are held responsible. That the person is under your care, or you co-sign for somebody. So their actions is there, but you also help in the background as responsible, because you're co-signing. But whatever the outcome is, both parties have to deal with it. If you have assets, they come after your assets. So Guru is like that. He is intervening, but he's also held highly responsible. Didn't you know that if you could not and did not purify your dependents, that you would have to be accountable for their sins? You have so many hundreds of sinners connected to you. Therefore, you have many debts to atone for. You should understand in the environments of devotion and love that things should be done that enhances the devotion. When someone becomes sinful, then they are not only sinning themselves and putting sin into the environment, encouraging others, but if they have a connection with an acharya, a spiritual personality, then they are also dumping some of those sins onto the person that is going to be accountable for. Explains in the Bhagavatam, sometimes the spiritual master has to experience bad dreams as a way of extinguishing some of the negative actions of disciples and dependents. Or sometimes the body becomes very sick, or sometimes one even has to, leaves the body, the body is taken away. Yamaraj didn't allow me to study not only so many scenes from this lifetime, but from many lifetimes. I saw myself in and out of many different bodies, just like an actor in a dressing room. We're changing bodies, like somebody is changing suits, clothes. The life force is there, the body is changing. Every time there's death, you change the body, life force is still existing. The body is just gone. I saw myself changing bodies, just as imagine an actor trying to put on different uniforms, different suits to see different customs, to see which one is proper, or different roles they're playing. They rush back in for another uniform. They change again, another uniform. I noticed how each time I was in a different body, I normally accepted that body as myself, often forgetting what my mission was. Sometimes an actor becomes so engrossed in the role that even when the person goes home, they're thinking and acting in that particular way. Some people have mental breakdown. They get so much into role-playing, they lose their sense of humor. Even times when there was some clarity surrounding the environment, I normally accepted the body as myself, often forgetting what my mission was. Even times when there was some clarity, the surrounding environment would have such an effect on me. I would frequently become acculturated. As I studied these lives, I seemed so foolish. It seemed foolish how I became so absorbed in distractions. Many times we look back at things we did and we wonder, how did I do that crazy stuff? Superficialities, in other cases, it was even more ridiculous how I tolerated so much nonsense under my care. as if negative things would just blow away. In every life, there was so much help always available to connect with, so as to tune into or return to the spiritual world. It's never that supreme lower end agents just leave us alone and they don't care for us and we're just left struggling. There's always so much facility. But the question is, do we take advantage of it? In every life, there was so much help always available to connect with, so as to tune into or return to the spiritual world. But as I was so carried away with each costume and the background, I kept avoiding the obvious. When I looked closer at this particular lifetime, I saw I had even more help than in the past. But still the distractions were many. There were many temptations, many things. If we're not strong, we will get so distracted. One has to be very determined and focused not to fall prey to hypocrisy or to temptation. To have real sense of integrity and principle centeredness, and ultimately to fix oneself in transcendence. Trying to defend myself, according to Amaraj, trying to defend myself, I said, I always made my prayers, I chanted my 16 rounds every day, never broke four regulative principles. Yamaraj turned to his assistant and he said, explain things to this pretender. His assistant said, yes, you prayed every day, you chanted every day, but your chanting was more for liberation than unmotivated selfless service. Sometimes we pray because we just want to be freed of some problem. And it's not really an expression of real devotion. But we pray and we meditate and we make salat, we do all kinds of things because we're still self-centered about what happens to me. We want our peace, our happiness, our liberation. Yes, you follow the four regulative principles. No eating of flesh. No taking of intoxications, no gambling, no engaging in illicit sex. But your mind almost daily broke principles. See, there's the physical sinful actions, and there's the sinful thoughts, or there's the seeds of sinful reflections. And those seeds, just like in garden or in farming. So if you plant the seed, then you water it, and that seed can become a plant. There's the seed of bhakti, seed of devotion, seed of compassion and love, and there's also the seeds of sin. So we must take out the weed, stop the sin, but also stop the sinful mentality. Because the sinful mentality is not stopped, and later it becomes into what? Thinking, willing, feeling, and actions. Every action is an expression first of thought, reflection, and then it turns into the manifested sinful concern. So, Yamaraj and his assistants were saying, it's not just enough only to stop the sin, but the sinful reflections, they must also be checked because they will later turn, or can later turn into some sinful action. Your physical body changes every lifetime, but your mind carries you into the next existence. So these mental deviations are very disturbing, because the quality of mindset is going to determine the next physical body that the soul is now going to enter into. Then I explained, what about all the service I did? And trying to find ways. Prove my case. The assistant said, you are calling serving your ego devotional service. Sometimes people do so many things. But behind it, they're just serving their own ego. Better than not serving at all. But still, it's not pure because so much is done because of their desire for distinction, for adoration. They want to be distinguished as being the great person. They're more concerned with being considered the great person than being the serious great person. So it's a show about it. It's not official. There's a lot of that, a lot of artificiality. A lot of hypocrisy with the yasati, there's a lot and lot of artificiality. The artificialness really shows when things get really difficult, then it begins to show how much one is genuine and whether one is superficial. Your greatest interest was your own fame. So you are successful, for you are now famous here amongst the infamous. So many times you find the priestly class, they become contaminated. And instead of really being the servants of God, they're trying to use the God connection to do their own stuff. Spirituality become a big religion, become huge for politics, and very, very powerful for fame. As you'll see, it's no accident. Some of the best politicians come out of the religious connections, because they can train them very well how to be expert in manipulating and overseeing and controlling. So if there's not a consistent purity, then one will become contaminated. Consistent purity with humility. I mentioned to Yamaraj and his assistants that I had a powerful spiritual master who I was connected with. He said, yes, as this is even another reason why you have been given to us. Krishna sent one of his topmost special agents, his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. He was specially empowered representative of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. He was the Sinapati Bhakta, was predicted in the Chaitanya Mangala by Lord Chaitanya. As Lord Chaitanya said, he himself would spread the holy names throughout India, but later there would be a Sinapati Bhakta, a great field commander, who would go to every corner of the world to reclaim souls. So even though Krishna sent such a great soul to assist all of you, you and most others did not honor him properly or submit fully to his desires. Krishna felt he was overstaying and therefore called him back. Sometimes very great servants of God can be called back early, because as they go into environments, normally they never understood. You look at the life of the greatest saints, you see that they were abused, they were crucified or they were assassinated. And so there are times when the Lord calls back his agents because the environment that the agent is sent in is not sufficiently reciprocating, or he says that's enough. Because whenever he sends agents, they're basically going into hellish environments where there is so much lack of God consciousness, and they are revolutionary because they're trying to instill righteousness and piety and devotion in environments that are basically non-devotional. So therefore, the tyrants of such environments will constantly try to find ways to check to stop their particular missions. You see that if you look at the great saints, how they had to work very hard in environments that were very, very hostile, but still through their love and compassion, they were sent by the Lord and tried to do his bidding, even though they not understood. So Krishna felt he was overstaying, and therefore he called him back, even though he was ready himself to continue trying to help all of you, brethren and grateful souls. The sins of his unqualified disciples brought his body down so fast. Whereas at one point, Prabhupada, before he left the planet, as spiritual master, your grandfather was spiritual master. He had stopped eating, he had stopped sleeping, stopped meeting, but that was a long time ago. And his body was just so frail, his bones. And he had mentioned that he was in this shape due to accepting so many unqualified disciples, because there is a price that's connected with mentorship. The people have a tendency of thinking that spiritual mentorship means you just give orders and people follow and they worship you and they honor you and this and that. No, it means you are held even more accountable, because now you're working as an agent to try to bring about righteousness. And if you don't do that, then there is tax. And if you do that, there's responsibility and accountability as you take on those burdens on behalf of the Lord. It's not that Supreme forgets about his agents, but they are dear to him because they're willing to come into environments and to take on so much burden on behalf of trying to uplift the world and to raise consciousness. And this is why we see the example of Jesus being crucified and suffering, and Muhammad being poisoned and suffering, and Buddha being life being threatened, and also assassination attempts. Mahamudra, Madhavacharya, Bhagavacharya, Pakistan, and so many, you see, and Zoroaster. Because they take it upon themselves to come amongst basically where there's so much insanity, where you try to help people, instead of them in most cases responding, is simply become deviant, or they go on with their deviations, or they even attack that which is trying to help them. So therefore, we see through the scriptures how such souls are very dear to the Lord, and they bring such benediction if one is able to respond to their particular community messages. So then in conclusion, so the sins of the unqualified disciples have brought his body down so fast. Now you, the disciples, must hold some responsibility for his departure. So those like you must be dealt with on three levels. And then the levels are explained. The burden you called your spiritual master, first level. Second level, your own weaknesses. And third level, the sins of your disciples. Which area do you want to suffer for first? When we go before Yamaraj, we have some pious credits, and we also have some sinful actions. And these things are evaluated and processed. And then what happens to the individual, whether he goes to heaven, whether he goes to hell, whether he goes to another physical body, whether he's in the spiritual world, whether he has heavy negative things first. Our representative, and you didn't fully take shelter there. And therefore you're held accountable because of the sinfulness that was involved in that. Second, your own sinful expressions, activities. And third, as a saint oneself, the sins of those who you need to take care of, who their sins have become part of your own karma. As soon as so he said, which area do you want to suffer for first? I was speechless. But I managed to say, for those burdens that I caused my guru. As soon as I said this, Yamaraj himself appeared again and he exclaimed, you, my dear, are most fortunate. Your spiritual master, having such pity for you, has intervened. He has summoned us for your release. See, the spiritual master is acting as a lawyer, spiritual lawyer on a very high level. So the saint can petition, can intervene, can even make additional expressions, additional claims, additional prayers for one's spiritual health, even after so much ongoing instruction. Then I looked up. Your spiritual master, having such pity for you, has intervened. He has summoned for your release. The high-level spiritual masters, they're not limited to any material or spiritual realm, according to their quality. And so they can appear in different environments, just like people think, okay, Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, so they came and now they're finished. No, they're on a mission. And so they come into one universe, they do their work, they go somewhere else, and they do other things. And sometimes they go back and associate with the Godhead, and then they're on. They're on like a part of a spiritual foreign, allegiance, they go. They're part of the diplomatic corps. They move about in such a way. So, here, spiritual master, intervening in the realms of the court of Yamaraj. And Yamaraj is saying, even we are amazed at how he is willing to absorb more reactions for some like yourself. Then I looked up, and I heard my spiritual master's voice. I heard his voice saying, you do not belong there. Come with me, my beloved son. Once again, we are together. I went to offer my obeisances. As I bowed down, he touched me on my head. I swirled in ecstasy, thinking how compassionate my guru is and how unworthy I am, as I lost consciousness. So, this is the conclusion. So what we're looking at is what happens at the time of death. That there are so many different bodies, and that the body is like a prison suit. There are different types of suits, according to the caliber of the crime. And not that God himself has to arrange all the different things for the deviants, but he has angels and archangels and demigods and all other kinds of some powerful beings who do some of this work. And some of that work is dealing with entities once they have now finished their time in a particular body and they're going to move into another existence. And if somehow they have been blessed to be very ethical and pious and follow religious principles, then of course there's always an acceleration or some type of improvement. And if they have given up all sin and have been blessed by fully sinless beings, then their karma can be so altered that they can be taken back to the spiritual kingdom. And this is why that there's always this sending of the sons or the pure representatives of God to be able to intervene into the hellish environments to try to stimulate people to make serious, complete changes. And they take a big risk in doing this, because as they do this work, then they have to take on some of the environment that they're dealing with. And so it is always recommended that one should be very serious and not complicate the missions of the devotees of God. Or that one should realize that everything is going to have some reciprocity. So if you are following strictly, and if you are taking advantage of the spiritual rules and regulations, then there will be serious growth. And if not, then there will be a lot of static in the environment. The individual will have to suffer. The mission will be disturbed. The spiritual master will have to pay some heavy price for it. The Krishna and God will be very disturbed. Don't think that when Jesus was crucified, that the Supreme was happy about such, or that people did this without having to cover for the consequences. Although when they come, they naturally suffer and they absorb so much of the negativity. But still there's the dynamics of who goes on sinful, who propagates sin in their presence, and who changes consciousness and begins to become a part of the process of devotion rather than stagnation. So we, those who have made various types of commitments, to be very genuine about their commitments. And one who doesn't commit themselves to some serious spiritual process hasn't really lived. Because animal life is just to live based on emotions and just based on instinct. And so the mature human life is about being accountable and being regulated in one's life. And constantly trying to pursue the higher values of life. Just to live for eating, sleeping, mating, defending is basically sophisticated animal life. But when we pursue knowledge of God, when we pursue spiritual paradigm, then we are activating what the human platform is really about. Pursue self-realization. And ultimately not to have to go before Yamaraja's court. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or any comments?
Question is, I've been thinking about this and what a nice time to ask. Being that Lord Chaitanya was here roughly 500 years ago and we're in like the afterglow, and that's going, and there's the we have the chance to have a golden age, Lord Chaitanya, if the proper work is done. So that means it's a very pious time on the planet, we've seen. And so even just anybody who's maybe not even religious, maybe even opposed, do they even still have a particular kind of a good karma to be on the planet at this time for the maybe the opportunity that awaits in the future? That's
Before there are the eras of great, great piety, there's always serious cleansing. What we're looking at now is so much degradation and gradual cleansing processes going on, where there is, you know, earthquakes and famines and droughts and literally millions of people dying from AIDS and from different types of wars, and again, there will be more types of calamities. So this is part of the unfoldment that will eventually bring about a much higher age. That will be so much more based on simple type of lifestyle. Much of what we now call modernity or modern civilization is very demonic, very manipulative and exploitive, and has all kinds of ways in imposing on the individual, causing the individual to be more mechanical, more imprisoned from their spiritual considerations. So there'll be many things that will happen that will take away some of those shackles. But before that happens, you'll find, you know, life to be very, very difficult. Or what it will seem like, you know, one calamity after another. Any questions? Just like when, you know, there's some types of medicines that when you take it, it helps, but it makes the symptoms a little worse first, and then after that stage is over, then you restore it, you know, to a healthy state. So the medicine is, or the effects is that they're having on the planet now is part of the birth pains. I don't know, a woman is having a baby, so 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, many complications. Complications are there because the life is about to, you know, to be presented to the world. You know. Yes, one can practice any science on their own, but no intelligent person wants to practice anything that's very powerful on their own, because there's so much dabbling, confusion, lack of clarity. People who do the best in whatever they do is because they know who to connect with, they know where to get information, they know what role models to take advantage of. They know where the experts are, so they become experts because they connect with experts. Anybody who becomes expert is because they have somehow been able to connect with expertness, and so they become expert. So similar, someone sick, they can dabble so many ways to try to deal with themselves, and if it's not so serious, they can perhaps deal with it. But if it's more serious affair, then they want to get some advice, some help, get some guidance. Someone is dealing with legal concerns, especially these days. Law is so complex. Person can go to court and try to defend themselves, but it's dangerous. Better that they get some clarity, some assistance, some guidance. So, well, we do this in almost everything that we do in life. We're always looking for authority, looking at criteria to see what is right, what is proper, what is the best thing to do. So why should we think differently when it comes to spiritual life? When it comes to spiritual life, we want to get as much help as we can so we can use that to do what we have to do. No true mentor says that he or she is going to do everything for you. That's not a proper type of teacher, because that's not how spiritual informant takes place. But the idea is to help to give some guidance, some protection, some understanding. The individual can now use that to do what he or she has to work on or is trying to do in the world. So it is more expedient and wiser, of course, to look for connections that can help one. Any other questions? Look at the best athletes, look at the best scholars, look at the, you know, the best physicians. In so many cases, they have noticed, they've taken shelter, they've gotten some advice and guidance, mothers who are good and many others. And then they use that as they use their own individuality alone to smooth that.
My question was, through reincarnation, the soul can be promoted or demoted, and so we go through many lifetimes. My question was, is the soul's ultimate destiny to go to the spiritual sky, no matter how many lifetimes it takes?
Yeah, the soul is in unnatural environments. As long as it still has to take on the garbage of some physical body. Because whatever the physical body is some disease, some old age, some death, limitation. And so that's why, as you were saying, from the Judeo-Christian perspective, you see the discussion that it's not that flesh and blood goes to the kingdom of God, because flesh and blood is temporary. Physical bodies are all some temporary connections. But the real life force, that is the real individual, is the soul that's inside of the physical body. That is what is moving each time you're taking another body, So the goal is for the soul to be able to experience Satyananda Vigraha, eternality, eternal knowledge, eternal happiness, eternal bliss. And that is the natural environment, natural association and connection with the soul. As long as we are constantly running after happiness, not being satisfied, disappointed, running after knowledge, not being satisfied, you understand we're still cutting into a body. The soul has all of it. So it is a part of God. It's the same in qualities as the body. Now it's just being somewhat covered over. So we're literally cheating ourselves by constantly having to take on these temporary problems. So the ultimate is for the community to return back home. We all have a wonderful home. Not that, you know, God has favors. Some of us, you know, we have no home. And so he constantly sends representatives to remind us that, hey, come home, aren't you ready to come home now? Well, not quite. I'll get a little closer, but I'm not quite ready to come home. I want to try a couple more things. Huh? Maybe I'll be happy here. Let me try a few other things. And then finally we get to the point, we're no longer really ready to engage in anything outside of what the highest thing we can have. Then we get the help that allows us to come back. It's like a craziness, you know, of being into our bodies. And we can have something so greater, but the addictions that we have keep making this thing that maybe it's going to be okay. We just try this thing and that thing. Somebody's in prison. They're never really going to be fully happy until they're free. But they're thinking, well, you know, maybe if I can be in the yard a little longer, maybe if I have a nicer cell, perhaps if I have video, television in the room, you know, perhaps if I can have my girlfriend come maybe in a couple of months, you know, everything will be okay. So it makes things a little better, but doesn't really change the ultimate situation. Ward said, you can leave now. I'm not sure, you know, I think that it's nice here. After all, I get 3 meals a day. Yeah, that's it, fine. Any last questions? See, some people have, and as an example, you know, the prodigal son, example, infants. Sometimes one has been in a situation of degradation so long that they're thinking that there's nothing better. Mm-hmm. People try to help them, you know, just to be more clean, be more moral, be more ethical, so many things. And it's so hard because they've accepted a defeatist, you know, mentality for so long that they're thinking that there's nothing beyond it. And so for many people, the real help is to start showing them something different so they begin to, begins to get integrated into their consciousness. And then they realize, yeah, I don't have to, you know, live like this. And some people have been so many generations in poverty, they're really thinking that there's nothing but that for themselves. So many people have been in such a bad relationship for so long that they've already accepted that nobody really cares, and nobody's really treating, you know, what you're treating kind. So they just expect to be treated, you know, harshly. They position themselves to be abused or beautiful. So we have that same tendency in mature bodies. We can be in a mature body for so long that we start thinking, hey, this is it. We settle in, you know, the mediocrity before the fetus has been down. You guys know?
This morning in the meeting we had with the devotees, I said to them, even though I feel like I may be ready to go, I feel that I haven't followed your instructions enough, fully enough to go. And this talk today, I'm hearing really, I'm still feeling that, but I want to ask how or if there's a way one can know as they're getting closer to where they are in consciousness, I guess is the word. Because I heard you say, you know, I chant 16 rounds, I serve the deities, I try to serve the devotees, and yet I'm sure there's aspects. Is there a way in this life one can prepare consciousness knowingly that they may get past Yamaraj or not have to spend too much time there?
Yeah, we find constant themes about.
I got another birthday coming.
Talking about lineage, we're all probably be gone. And she'll still be here. These days, young folks are less healthy than the older people. You know. There's always the theme. You know, we should put nothing before God. So to the degree that our life has become orientated in that way. To the degree that we're ready to, you know, have to take physical bodies. So it has a lot to do with desire, of course. As our desire is strong and strong, then we get the help, the facility, the realization, the understanding to be able to operate on that level, you know, of consciousness. And, those two things that I stress a lot of times, in any endeavor, it's important to have greater appreciation about the goal. So then you want to move toward the goal faster, but also to have greater fear of the stagnation. So if you have more fear of the temptation, of the sin, of the Maya, you won't play into it. You have greater appreciation for the goal, become more determined, try to acquire that goal. It's ultimately all about love. The more that we have love and compassion, and we want to grow so we can share that growth with others, we want to grow we can connect with the ultimate objects of our love. The more that we have the love, the less that we get brought down by the things of the lust, which are all the expressions of sin. So the thing we always want to work on is more selfless love, compassion. And we can literally pray also in our prayers and meditations and our chanting. We can pray in the mindset that, dear Lord, whatever is necessary for me to be a better servant in your care, please let those things happen in my life. Whatever obstacles are there is causing me not to be able to be more of a proper devotee, proper disciple, proper parent, proper mother, proper child. So you can pray in this way. Please, I want to serve you better. Please allow me to be a better servant. And whatever things are there as obstacles, remove those so I can serve you. And we have to be careful because it may not always come the way it's going.
Please accept my own reasons. Speaking to the therapy of the question that was asked is why did God just think of sacrifice being who he is needed to have representation? I thought about this when she was very young, and I think that kind of watched it. Could you please explain that?
Yeah, it's very simple. As we mentioned, how being into a body is a form of craziness. And so, when we make an offense, it causes us to break, we are penalized even more. Like you make a crime, and then someone comes to arrest you, or to help you, or speak to you, and you make another crime. It gets worse. So, it's just like in the example of the prodigal son. So the son is obedient, and the father is concerned, so he sends someone to bring the son to him. Send someone who can act more on the mode of the son, who is more likely to be able to try to bring the son to his love. So we're so much crazy, and we'd be so, offensive if the Supreme Lord himself appeared, because in the crazy state that we're in. So to help us and to tune it down a little bit, he empowers or sends representatives on his behalf to connect with us, who are there to kind of move with us a little bit, to help to guide us, you know, through some of our merits. It's not that he is weak and limited, so he's got to send somebody to do his work. The opposite. That because he's so loving and so powerful, and we're so insane and so crazy, that he arranges to keep sending the rangers to remind us to see, oh, are you ready now? Or you're a little bit more sane? Just send this one to help you to get a little bit more sane. Another one to help you get more sane. And then one day, you try to, you know, take full advantage of this. So this is the reason. This is an expression of love. Representatives are a direct personification of Supreme Personality of Godhead's compassion and love. He sends agents to come amongst us to try somehow to help us out of our sin. So they may look like us, talk like us, they come in different parts of the world, different times, different traditions, somehow so that no soul on the planet is left just hanging. There's some kind of connection of this. This is how pervasive God's love is, how much is attentive, even though we turn our backs, how much is attentive is still trying to reclaim those deep energies. So if you look at the last question, you have to go to Baltimore to another program. Let's send another hand in the back.
This question.
Not back for long. We're arranging to go to Suriname and to Russia and to a couple other places soon, so we've got this good.
I do want to kind of follow up on this question regarding manifested spiritual guides and masters. This question has come up maybe before, but I'm thinking maybe I can get a little bit more insight. So just as we have manifested guides, we have unmanifested spiritual guides. And very also to help direct us and guide us. But I understand that.
Some are. They can be all different types.
Yeah, they're different types. But, you know, for the most part, unless we, you know, on certain streets or anything, we have certain, what they call ascended energies. So the question generally comes up in different circles for me that, you know, I have my own, you know, internal guides, and I can tap into those guides and, you know, the direction that way. And we know in the West that we have two examples of, you know, manifested spiritual masters, and especially models or events that God has used. So oftentimes, then, you know, my exchanges with people who are, you know, because they're in the rest of the world, less accepting of, you know, manifest experiences. How can we explain the meaning? I guess you just see it, but the difference between the two,
yeah, there are always so many helpers that we do not see. There's so many life forms. As we said earlier, how Krishna, how God never just leaves us, you know, he's hanging. So we have physical guides, and we have also some non-manifested guides. But with our craziness, if we were so able to just to use unmanifested guides, we wouldn't be in these physical bodies anyway. If it was so easy for us to access higher truth, we wouldn't be in these crazy environments. It's, you know, it's a heavy disease being in a physical body on this type of planet. It's not even a higher planet. And even those who come into the material worlds who are themselves pure, they also are connected with different types of guides. And they're happy to, you know, to do that. One of the ways that we understand that they're bona fide is because they come in a connection. See, when you find a prophet who disappears, he says, there's no need for books, no need for other teachers, I'm here now, that's it. You know, it's bogus. But we see these great teachers saying, how I come to fulfill this, I'm sent by my Father. Jesus said, my works not of mine, but the Father who sent me. You see one teacher after another teacher. They do not come in that mood of that, I'm here now. Everybody else who came before me, forget about it. Every other book you read, throw it out. The other teachings that was there, is useless now. Because then they're saying that, oh, God's mercy is only manifested in them. But they are coming because they are part of a brigade of helpers. So if even the great, great souls in some of the highest levels, they also have the various guides and assistants, and they're connected, then why should we feel that we don't? What it means is that there are many people who still playing the game of I and mine and egocentricity. And so the idea of just having internal guides means that whatever I feel connected with at a certain time, I act upon that. Whatever's expression seems comfortable to me, I do that, and I'm okay. And so these are, you know, in general, the achievers. Why? Because if someone sufficiently wants help, then the God or the Holy Ghost inside will give one a physical expression, a physical connection, along with all the other non-manifested beings. So if someone hasn't got a guide, and there's a certain part of them that has not become desperate enough where they want to advance, where they can get that kind of personal care. So, you know, if someone is comfortable with not having physical guide, no problem. That's up to them. And then it means their mind becomes a majority. Because the mind and intellect can play many games. You can decide what you're going to accept, what you don't accept. You can codify, you can interpret any way you want. When you have a guide who is spiritual, but is manifesting before you to help you as you're dealing through the material things to access the spiritual, then you can have the direct instructions, guidance, encouragement, protection, chastisement, warnings. It's all a part of mentorship. So many people, they don't even want that. They're still trying to have the kingdom of God without God. When God's agents come, they're not happy because they don't really want to be religious. They want to play the religious game as they do other stuff. They're not really trying to sufficiently purify themselves. But if we want to purify ourselves or become expert in something, we want immediately, we want to find out some connections that can help us to know what we're to do, so then we can do it. So we'll stop here now, and we'll take questions. I'm sorry, we'll take announcements. Go ahead, questions.